Welcome back, and thank you for joining us on 770. You're on More Than Money. Dave Popowich here today. Faisal is away, and Rob has stepped out for this particular session. We've got, you know, an aging population. We talked about this at the top of the show, Rob and I did. And as we age, forget about the pandemic for a minute, the population ages. What becomes more and more important to us is access to health care and the quality of care and the quality of life that we experience as we move into and through retirement and as we age through that period. And there's lots of frustrations that we've experienced, again, probably more acutely during the pandemic, but we want to sort of break it apart and see, take a close look at the healthcare system and then how the healthcare system supports, like where the strengths are and where some of the weaknesses or areas of opportunity to improve are. Now, I'm not a medical expert, so we've got a terrific guest joining us to help us understand some of the complexity of this. So Dr. Robert Bell is a professor emeritus, Department of Surgery at the University of Toronto, former Deputy Minister of Health for Ontario, and the former CEO of the University Health Network. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
We've got a big topic to try to tackle, and I hope I did it justice in terms of the introduction there, but you and some colleagues had collaborated on an article that was published that I read with some interest, and I'm going to start maybe from a general perspective, if we can, and just talk a little bit about your perception of the state of affairs of the Canadian healthcare system. And I understand the pandemic has probably identified some areas where there were some acute problems or perhaps raised some issues. And you can certainly are free to speak to that. But I'd like to just get your sense of where we are nationally and of course, provincially. I mean, we have obviously provincial budgets control these things, but your sense of where we are right now.
Well, Dave, I think any conversation after the last 2.5 years has to be focused on Canadian perceptions of our system that have developed during this pandemic. And you know, there's good and there's bad. I mean, I think when we look around the Western world and we compare mortality in Canada to the United States and to most of Western Europe, we're pleased that, thank goodness, fewer people have died in Canada per capita than in many of the wealthy parts of the world. But we can also see real problems that have occurred, and perhaps you talked about an aging population in your introduction, and certainly in central Canada, especially in Ontario and Quebec, one of the big concerns has been the terrible, tragic outcomes that have occurred in our long-term care nursing homes, where COVID literally ran rampant through overcrowded old facilities that didn't have enough staff to begin with and immediately found themselves short-staffed because of people getting sick and requiring isolation. And the remarkable thing that I think struck Canadians during the pandemic was a higher proportion of mortality in this country occurred in nursing homes than in any other country in the world. So close on 80% of death occurred in our nursing homes during various stages of the pandemic. And I think that was a surprise. It was a wake-up call to Canadians. So when myself and my authors thought about the series of articles that we wrote in the Globe and Mail, I think we thought about lessons learned during the pandemic, but also general perceptions that have been growing for years about issues that occur in the Canadian health system, predominantly related to two things. And the first was access. You mentioned that, whether it's getting to see your family doctor when you need to see your family doctor, whether it's getting referred to a specialist, it's getting into a surgical suite to have an operation that's going to allow you to live a better life, getting help for mental health care for you, for your family, getting access to medications for some Canadians who don't have the good fortune of having a drug plan. Getting access is one of the key issues that is a concern for Canadians across the country. And of course, the other thing is seniors, because our population of people over the age of 75 is growing at 4% per year. And this is an economic threat to our healthcare system, but it's also, we learned through the pandemic, just a risk in general for people who are aging. What kind of care are they going to receive?
Yeah, Bob, you know, one of the things, and it's a bit of a taboo topic, but you guys, when you authored this article as a group, you addressed this notion of, you know, our publicly funded system versus perhaps a two-tier or adding some private funding. And there's, the U.S. mostly private. You've got Australia with a pretty clear distinction between public-private. The conclusion of the article was that the publicly funded system is better. And I'm just going to throw that ball to you, and maybe you can walk through us what your research indicated and your conclusion on that.
Well, our view is clearly that Canadians can afford publicly funded healthcare, that there are many things that we can do that would make our healthcare system better, make access faster, and make our system more cost-effective. And we would lose some of those advantages if we were to accept a separate portion of the system that was developed for profit for medically necessary care. There are many things in our system that are for profit today. Pharmacies, where we purchase our medications, are obviously for-profit organizations. We're not saying that some publicly funded care should not be offered by for-profit organizations. But physician services, services that occur in hospital, we think the lessons learned from places like Australia that you mentioned. I'm an orthopedic surgeon by background, and I know that the experience for Australians is dramatically different. If you have for-profit care that you pay for yourself, or you have publicly funded care, and guess what? Those places providing for-profit care don't provide everything. They only provide the fast, profitable aspects of treatment. They cream the milk to take those services that they can provide at a profit. If you're sick, if you need ICU care, if you need emergent care, they don't want to look after you. They send you to their public hospitals. So why would we allow organizations to take money out of our systems? Our hospitals, our physicians across this country are extremely expert at providing care. We need to give them the tools they need to make our system faster, better, and more cost effective.
Yeah, and I noted in the article, and I think it was compared against the United States on a per person or per cost basis, what healthcare costs Canada versus the average Canadian versus US. It was a significantly different, it was over double, I think, what the U.S. cost was relative to the Canadian cost. And I got to tell you, I was a bit surprised when I read that.
Yeah, much higher in the United States than it is in Canada. Now, Australia actually spends less than we do, and it has issues related to tax points that I won't bore you with, tax advantages that they offer for private insurance being purchased. But, the Canadian health system is already very efficient. Especially when you look at the publicly funded part of our health system. And certainly introducing for-profit operators of medically necessary care, it's going to introduce an extra cost of profit. And my view is, if there's extra money being provided to the system, why not put it into our very efficient hospital system, for example? If we're going to provide more surgeries, as we've suggested in our article, in community surgery centers, let those be managed by the hospital sector for them to move as many people into those community surgery centers where care can be provided faster and less expensively than to give those centers to a private operator who will pick and choose what cases they do there, based not on patient need, but rather based on profit.
We've got about a minute left, Bob, and one of the threats I think that's arisen as a result of the pandemic is burnout in the medical community. I've got lots of friends that work there. It was a tough 2.5-3 year slug, as we know. And I think there's plenty of evidence suggesting that people now are at that point burning out and perhaps going to be leaving the industry in the next few years. Your thoughts on what that represents as a risk to our system?
Yeah, I think, two things. First of all the people that have worked in healthcare, physicians, nurses, personal support workers, or nurses' aides, as they're sometimes called, everyone has suffered during this pandemic, both from their own personal risk and from the extra time they've needed to spend at work. I think we need to think about the capacity of human resources in our health system. Any kind of approach to improving the health system needs to look at the people who work there, recognize that they're the major asset the system has.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to leave it there. We're going to have to take a quick break in a minute, and I want to remind everybody that, you know, a big part of the conversation that I have with clients as they move into retirement is, of course, access, Bob, as you've said, to care, and making sure that you've got the highest quality of care to live the highest quality of retirement life possible. That's all part of the equation. It's not just a financial calculation when we move into retirement, but it is proper health planning, proper legacy planning. And we're going to talk about that at our upcoming seminar, and I want to invite you to that. We'll be having the next seminar on Tuesday, June the 21st. It'll be 7 o'clock as usual, online. And you just need to go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register. We look forward to seeing you there. Now, join us after the break. I'm going to talk to Bob about some of the ways to fix our current system. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.